campus of Rio Salado College. For more information, visit sunsounds.org.
At 2 o'clock, we now continue with the reading of the Sunday, August 4th issue of the Sunday Arizona Republic. Our readers this afternoon are Fernando Cota and Bob Murphy.
Welcome back. We continue the second hour with the reading of the names in the obituary section. And those names are as follows: Shirley Sue Bain, Mary Ellen Barnard, William Phillips Bishop, Sam, Mr. N.A.U., Borzurin, Dr. Mary Lou Chiel, Alba Guntoli Clay, Carol Louise Collins, Ronald W. Cummings, Kenneth Ken Forrest DeMassey, Carol DeBree, Robert Delgado, Michael Mike Ralph Drennan, Thomas Newton Fannin, Walter Thomas Griffin, Benjamin Grossclose, Domingo Gutierrez, Charles David Hawkins, Dorothy Hayes, Judith Dean Houlihan, Ted Houlette, Hollycon Johnston Knox, Donald Kitchell, William Allen Cott, Dan Leonard, Judson Stillman Mathias,
John R. McConnell, Sr., Robert R. Bob McCormick, Margaret Diana Morris Radcliffe, Margaret Murphy, Barbara Ann Neighbor, Margaret O'Banion, Robert Orlando, Monsignor Michael O'Grady, Margaret Pogue, James J. Roush, Ralph Reyes, David Paul Reimer, Pete C. Rodriguez, Helen Joyce Ross, Mary Schoonmaker, Stuart Paul Scott, James D. Shea, Jr., Dolores May D. Smart, Alyssa Smith, Debbie Snodgrass, Ronald Roy Ron Traynor, Norm R. Tucker, Sadie O. Webster, Bernard Weiner, and Benjamin M. Sufranieri, Sr.
Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the family and friends of these individuals. For more information regarding details for any of these listings, please call Sun Sounds of Arizona at 480-774-8300.
Now we will turn to the sports section of the Sunday Arizona Republic. And our first article in the section is titled Cardinals Pack Roster with Hometown Players by Greg Moore, who's a columnist for the Arizona Republic. If things go bad for the Arizona Cardinals this year, feel free to boo. Just be careful how loud you do it at State Farm Stadium. There's a strong chance the fan you're sitting next to has more than a passing interest in what's happening on the field. DJ Foster, Zane Gonzalez, Ahmed Huntley, Christian Kirk, Byron Murphy, Brooks Reed, and Terrell Suggs all played high school or college ball in the state. It can't get better than this, and all this love, said Murphy, a rookie defensive back who starred at Scottsdale Saguaro. That's something that you want to keep playing the game for. You've got fans here. You've got family here. You've got friends here. You just want to keep making them proud. There's a lot of support, to be sure, but those inclined to look for potential traps and pitfalls would be wise to point out that playing in your hometown can lead to distractions. Proximity increases the intensity of family problems. Long-forgotten acquaintances can emerge demanding favors. And there's always the issue of tickets. But veteran running back DJ Foster, who also played at Saguaro before starring at Arizona State, dismissed the potential negatives. "It's not too bad, you know. Here's what happens. When you come, you've got to set the standard real quick. I don't have 50 tickets to be handing out to everybody," he said with a laugh. It's clear how much he loves being in his hometown. Just having that experience and having family and friends at the games and stuff, memories like that are just unbelievable to cherish, he said. "It's very rare for guys at this level to be able to experience that. I'm definitely blessed, and I enjoy every second of it. You never know how fast this can end." Foster is the oldest of the trio of Saguaro SaberCats on the roster. Kirk, a second-year wide receiver, played on the same team with Murphy. "We take pride in our high school, definitely," he said. "Everyone thinks it's cool having three guys from the same high school on the same team. You've got to rep it proudly." Hundley, a veteran quarterback who starred at another suburban Phoenix Power program, Chandler, has good perspective on why it's so important. "It just gives you faith," he said. "It's important to see people have success, especially for young people. Being able to see that the guys who came before you, who are making it and are playing for your hometown NFL team, I think that's a big boost of confidence." Reed, a defensive lineman who played high school and college ball down in Tucson, is back home after 8 years in Houston and Atlanta. "It's fun, you know. Just a chance for a lot of my friends and family to make it to games. And me and my wife love Arizona. It's pretty much a dream opportunity for me," he said. "Guys that I played with at the U of A live in Phoenix. I still keep in touch with former Sabino High School football coach Jay Campos and some other coaches that I had in Tucson. Reed is another player who struggles to find the downside of playing in his home state. Drawbacks?" he said. "No drawbacks. None. Zero. Of course, there's the issue of the tickets again." "I'll be giving out tickets," Reed said. "Maybe just the ticket price." "It's a legitimate concern, so much so that Murphy had already thought about it back at the start of rookie camp. However many tickets we get, that's how many I'm going to give out," he said back in May. "I can't do 100 tickets. How many tickets I get, that's where my family is going to be." He said it with a laugh. His focus was clearly on the upside. "Obviously, in my hometown, I feel like I've got to go harder. I've got people who've been here supporting me my whole life," he said, "and now I've got to go hard and show them what I can do." There are sure to be growing pains. The Cardinals have a new coach, a new offense, a new defense, a new quarterback, and new players all over the roster. But right now, there are at least 7 guys who don't feel new at all. They're comfortable here. They're home.
Red, white, and ready to go. Cards prep for preseason opener versus Chargers. This article is by Bob McNamann of the Arizona Republic. It was a cross between a dress rehearsal and a glorified walkthrough, a chance for first-year coach Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals to simulate live game operations in advance of Thursday night's preseason opener against the visiting Los Angeles Chargers. It featured real referees, cheerleaders, player introductions, a quick speech to the fans by Kingsbury, who ended it by promising, "We can't wait to cut it loose for you this year, and oh yeah, a lot of football. At the end of the day, we just wanted to see us play sound football," linebacker Jordan Hicks said of Saturday's annual red and white practice at State Farm Stadium. "This is a kind of a mock before the preseason game, so we want to be sharp. We want to be sound. This is important because even in walkthroughs, you have to be locked in mentally. As long as we're like that every single day and we're coming out here competing, we'll be good. With an appreciative crowd of several thousand on hand, the Cardinals had their moments when they looked great, average, and absolutely underwhelming. As crisp as they looked in some areas on Saturday, there were too many penalties and a lot of clunky play across the board during 11-on-11 work. Kicker Zane Gonzalez looked a little shaky as well in some of his field goal attempts. But hey, it's preseason for everyone, after all. In addition to having some coaches upstairs in the booth to work on substitutions and personnel groups, another area where Kingsbury was looking forward to using Saturday's event as a test run included continuing to improve headset communications from the sideline when calling in plays to rookie quarterback Kyler Murray. Both relied on hand signals during their college experience, but they've been practicing with NFL technology since the start of training camp. It hasn't always worked smoothly, according to Murray. It's been a challenge having to deliver the play to everyone while still trying to focus on Coach Kingsbury talking in my ear. You're trying to focus on saying things to the line and giving signals to the receivers, and that's probably the biggest adjustment I've had to deal with coming from college. I think it's a neat deal, but yeah, it takes some getting used to. As for getting used to the speed of the game at the NFL level, Murray will get a first-hand feel for that against the Chargers. The windows are tighter. You've got to anticipate things a lot more, he said. But what makes it fun? In college, dudes would be wide open and it would be pretty easy. But this is part of the NFL. The way Kingsbury sees it, Murray has already had nearly 2 weeks of facing real NFL defenses by going up against his Cardinal teammates every day in practice. I think he's seen it. We've gone against our ones a bunch of out there, and I understand the game and things of that nature, but we've been going against an NFL defense for a couple weeks now and all spring. I think it's more about getting out there, working operations, seeing the game clock and all those things that go into an actual game day. Cardinals defensive coordinator Vance Joseph has helped by throwing an array of disguising schemes at Murray and the rest of Arizona's offense. It's a regular occurrence at Cardinals camp, and Murray is thankful for it. I don't know about any other defensive coordinators in the league, but I think we've got a ton of good looks, a ton of different looks, a variety of different looks, and I think he's prepared me and the other quarterbacks pretty well. That being said, don't expect Murray and many of the Cardinal starters to play more than a couple of series next Thursday. It will be a case-by-case scenario, Kingsbury said, adding that if we think they need the work, they'll get the work. If we don't think they'll need it, they won't get it. The trend throughout the league seems to be less of the name players, so to speak, playing, so I can see it continuing to go that way. As for Murray, it depends. The goal is to get him out of the game having felt good about what he did, whether it takes a small handful of plays or several of them. As a rookie, Murray needs to let some live game reps, even though he's completely entrenched and knows the offense. For others such as veterans Larry Fitzgerald, Patrick Peterson, Terrell Suggs, and Chandler Jones, they'll probably get very few preseason snaps. What will be interesting is how Kingsbury decides to use running back David Johnson. Entering his fifth NFL season, is there any importance to playing him at all right now? It's a great question, Kingsbury said. I think we're working through that. I know David is feeling really healthy and is excited to go. We want to make sure by game one that he's at his peak. So whatever it takes to do that as a staff and with him, we'll figure that out and go from there. Kingsbury said if any particular starters are going to get semi-extended looks in the preseason, it probably will be members of the offensive line, who he said have been a bright spot in camp. That way, he said, backup quarterback Brett Hundley can be at his best and have an opportunity to make more plays when he's in games. As for the camp or for the game, quarterback Kyler Murray's first play of the red and white practice, a quick pass out to fellow rookie Keyshawn Johnson. Murray showcased his dual ability Saturday throughout the team's intra-squad scrimmage, but there's still work to be done. Cornerback Patrick Peterson was recognized ahead of the practice for his Pro Bowl selection last season. Peterson was the only Cardinal picked. It was his eighth selection, as he has made the Pro Bowl in each of his eight seasons. It was a mixed bag for Zane Gonzalez, the only kicker on the Cardinals roster. He missed multiple times, once he was kicking from 43 yards or deeper. But he did make a 45-yarder towards the end of the scrimmage to round it out. Rookie safety Deontay Thompson ended the practice with a highlight of his own. He picked off quarterback Drew Anderson and ran it all the way back, with a few defensive starters sprinting off the sidelines to meet him in the end zone to celebrate. For injuries, wide receiver Andy Isabella has a knee, offensive linebacker Brooks Reed, a lower body injury, safety DJ Swearinger, soft tissue injury, and defensive tackle Vincent Valentine has a leg knee, and are day-to-day. Tight end Charles Clay with a knee, Max Garcia also with a knee, and cornerback Brandon Williams with his back remain on the physically unable to perform list. Inside linebacker Hassan Reddick is out for two or three more weeks with his knee. And the quote from camp, "Oh no, no, we were tired. No, I'm just kidding. That was great. That was great for us. That was the first time we put together. We were able to go for a full stretch like that. It seemed good. Everybody seemed like they were in good wind." And that was from DJ Humphreys on whether or not it was good for the offensive line to get up and down the field. And up next, the team is off on Monday. The Cardinals will practice Tuesday at State Farm Stadium from 3:30 to 5:30, and practices are free to the public. Gates open 30 minutes prior to the start of practice, and practice times are subject to change.
Managing Time Tests Rising FC's Young Assistants by Drake Hills, The Arizona Republic. Tuesday training sessions with Phoenix Rising FC aren't like any other day. That's because each day is never the same, keeping Rising assistant coaches Blair Gavin and Peter Ramage constantly on their toes and on and off the pitch. The two often lead practices either as a pair or individually, forging strategies that require hours of preparation and collectively lead to Rising FC's approach on game day. This roughly one-year-old role for both soccer coaches has changed their personal lifestyles, testing their time management skills. On a mid-July morning, Ramage paced off the field after leading the players through a tactic-heavy training session. He's got to race to Sky Harbor Airport, where his wife, Tanisha, and two daughters have just arrived from their native England following a summer vacation. Within minutes, Ramage must switch from an assertive and authoritative coach to a loving and kind-hearted family man. But before Ramage could exit through the team facility doors, his phone rings. "That's Blair Gavin," he said with a smile. "He's probably calling about the next session." Although this balancing skill is common among the staff, it's relatively new for Ramage. Since joining the coaching staff in August last season, Ramage has learned how to produce at a high level, just as he did as a player in the English Premier League. But what has become Ramage's toughest challenge as a coach stems from something off the field. "My family just landed 5 or 10 minutes ago from the UK, and I have to leave here and make time for them," Ramage said. "I've got to be dad, I've got to be husband, and I just have to be ordinary Pete Ramage and not the first team assistant coach. But it's strange because coaching is always in the back of my mind." That day, Gavin had buzzed in from Los Angeles, where he was studying new training ideas and strategies used at Los Angeles Football Club, playing its second season in Major League Soccer and coached by former U.S. national team manager Bob Bradley.
D-backs hit 5 homers in a rout of the Nationals last night. Eduardo Escobar had 2 of Arizona's 5 home runs and drove in a career-high 7 runs to help the Diamondbacks beat Steven Strasburg and the Washington Nationals by a score of 18-7 Saturday night. Nick Ahmed, Jake Lamb, and Alex Avila also homered as Arizona knocked Strasburg around for the second time this season. Strasburg, with a record of 14 wins and 5 losses, entered with a 7-game winning streak, but gave up 3 homers and 9 runs before leaving with 2 outs in the 5th inning. The Diamondbacks have roughed up the Nationals' right-hander for 7 homers and 15 runs in his 2 starts against them, and were the last team to beat him with a 10-3 victory on June 15th. Escobar had a 2-run homer in the 1st inning and hit a 3-run homer in a 7th-run, 8-run, 8th inning, setting career season highs for homers at 24 and RBIs with 88. Lamb and Avila hit two out, two-run homers and a five-run fifth inning for a 10-4 lead. Lamb's came off of Strasburg, who left after Ahmed struck out but reached on a wild pitch. Avila homered off Mike Grace. Anthony Rendon had a three-run homer, Parra had a two-run triple, and Trey Turner and Kurt Suzuki had two hits apiece for the Nationals, who had won the previous seven at Chase Field. Strasburg, who leads the National League and is tied for the Major League lead in victories, had not given up a homer in 43 innings since the second inning of a 4-3 victory over Atlanta on June 21st. He has given up 16 homers so far this season. Arizona left-hander Robbie Ray, with a record of 10 wins and 7 losses, gave up 4 runs and 6 hits in 5 innings for his first career victory over the Nationals. He struck out 5 without a walk. Ray has been 0-5 in 6 starts against Washington. Ketel Marte had 2 hits and scored 3 times, and Ahmed had 2 hits and scored twice, as every Arizona position player had at least 1 hit and all but 1 scored.
And D-backs notes, Corbin, a Stranger at Chase Field with Nationals, by Catherine Fitzgerald and Richard Morin of the Arizona Republic. Patrick Corbin spent 6 seasons in Arizona, but Friday gave him a chance to explore some pockets of Chase Field that he still didn't really know. "Definitely strange being on this side," Corbin said. "I've never really been in this clubhouse." Corbin, now with the Nationals, is back in town to face his old team. He'll pitch against the Diamondbacks on Sunday. He's quite familiar with the lineup, but that advantage works both ways. "I'm hoping it helps. They know pretty well, too," Corbin said. "They've seen me my whole career that I've been here, but you know their hit is, you just try to go out there and execute pitches. I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to face them." Corbin was an all-star twice with the Diamondbacks. He signed with the Nationals on a 6-year deal in December. So far, he's 9-5 in 22 starts with an ERA of 3.23. Fans cheered as the Jumbotron cut to Corbin during Friday's game to note his return. Corbin still has a house in Arizona, so he was glad to be back. He also spent part of Friday catching up with old teammates and was planning on continuing that throughout the series. Of course, the team is rather different than it was a few months ago and compared to just a few days ago. Corbin joked that he's still catching up on which players are on what team, and some of the late trades came while he was on the plane to Arizona. He was, of course, well aware of the Zach Greinke trade, which left him a little shocked. "I really enjoyed him as a teammate. I know he's not the most outspoken person and keeps to himself a little bit," Corbin said. "But when you really get to know him, you can learn so much, and I was grateful to be able to play with him." Entering Saturday, the Diamondbacks sit 4.5 games out of the wild card spot the Nationals hold. But Corbin saw the value in the moves made by his former club for this year and the future. "I think with the coaching staff over here and the people they have in the front office, they're going to try to compete every year," Corbin said. "I enjoyed being a part of it, was a little disappointed with how good I thought our team was over the years there, and didn't really make it to where we thought we could."
4 Astros pitchers combine for no-hitter. Harris, Biagini, Devenski hold line with Sanchez. This article is by Christy Reakin. Aaron Sanchez looked like a reinvented pitcher in his Houston debut, throwing 6 stellar innings to start the Astros on a combined no-hitter Saturday night in their 9-0 victory over the Seattle Mariners. Sanchez was an all-star in 2016 and led the American League in ERA, but he's struggled badly this season and has lost 13 straight decisions to lead the majors with 14 losses. 3 days after he is acquired from Toronto at the trade deadline, the 27-year-old right-hander teamed with Will Harris, Joe Biagini, and Chris Devinsky to shut down Seattle. "Just trying to have a good first impression," Sanchez said. It was the second time in less than a month the last-place Mariners were no-hit by multiple pitchers. The Los Angeles Angels used two pitchers in a combined no-hitter July 12th against Seattle on a night when they honored late left-hander Tyler Skaggs by all wearing his number 45 in their first home game since his death. Sanchez, with a 4-14 record, was replaced by Will Harris to start the seventh after throwing 92 pitches. Harris and Joe Biagini also obtained from the Blue Jays in the same deal that netted Sanchez. Each worked one inning before Davinsky tossed a perfect ninth. He retired all-star slugger Danielle Vogelbach on a routine fly for the final out, setting off an Astros celebration on the field. Sanchez struck out six, walked two, and hit a batter with a pitch in his first win since late April. Houston manager A.J. Hinch patted Sanchez on the chest after he finished the sixth, and pitching coach Brent Strom offered a hearty handshake. The Astros have a history of improving the performance of pitchers they acquire. We don't have a magic dust, Hinch insisted after Sanchez was added. Still, Sanchez was eager to get going with his new team. I'm sure there's things that are on their mind and things that are on my mind, and it's an open line of communication here, he said after the deal.
And now we'll turn to the business section of the Sunday Arizona Republic. We have this article written by Russ Wiles titled, What to Know About Investing in Bonds. Much has been made of the stock market's bull market cycle reaching the 10-year mark recently, but bonds arguably have been on a general upward trend for much longer. Bond prices have risen and yields have declined for most of the past four decades, with only a few significant setbacks along the way. It's not likely this will change anytime soon, especially with the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates again. No wonder investors have poured money into bonds and bond funds, though they should be careful not to become complacent. Bonds are essentially standardized, tradable loans that investors make to government entities or corporations in return for interest payments or yield. They have been so predictable for so long that investors probably could use a refresher course on the risks. It also helps to take a fresh look at popular misconceptions about bonds in general and bond funds in particular. Myth: bond prices don't fall by much, if at all. Bond prices have been steady or rising for a long time, so it's easy to forget that prices can go in either direction. Bonds sometimes do decline, and sharply. For example, long-term government bonds tumbled more than 10% in both 2009 and 2013. When bond prices fall in unison, it's often because interest rates are rising. As the two move inversely, bond prices in general have been in a lengthy upswing since late 1981, reflecting the long decline in interest rates and inflation over that span. But higher rates will materialize eventually, and we could be much closer to the long-term lows than to the peaks. Bond prices also drop when issuers, especially corporations, look like they might have trouble making interest and principal payments. That hasn't happened much lately, after a decade of economic growth. Bond default rates now are less than half their long-term average, noted J.P. Morgan Asset Management. But credit worries eventually will resurface. When they do, the prices of some bonds will stumble. At any rate, many investors probably don't appreciate these risks. Both bond and stock investments represent important parts of a balanced portfolio, with bonds providing more income and stability and stocks more growth potential. But bonds, too, can fluctuate in price. A lot more cash has flowed into bond mutual funds and exchange-traded funds this year than has been withdrawn, suggesting investors aren't too concerned about the risks. By contrast, investors on balance have pulled more cash out of stock funds, according to the Investment Company Institute, the Fund Industry Trade Group. Myth number two, Fed rate cuts will propel bond price gains. It's easy to assume that Fed rate cuts help bond investors, but that's not necessarily the case. The central bank directly affects short-term rates, like those paid on bank deposit accounts and money market funds, as well as rates on credit cards and many other types of loans. Prices for long-term bonds, by contrast, are influenced much more, by inflation and inflationary expectations. Myth number three, bond funds are more risky than individual issues. Many investors prefer individual bonds because they know the date when a particular issue will mature and the price. That's not the case with bond mutual funds, which continually add new holdings to the portfolio and thus don't have a set maturity. Investors who desire the certainty of a fixed payoff date tend to favor individual bonds. But that doesn't mean bond funds are necessarily more risky. Portfolios provide more diversification or safety in numbers than one or a handful of bonds. If a corporation or municipality got into financial hot water, it wouldn't pull down a diversified portfolio by much. But if you were concentrated in a bond that went belly up, you could lose heavily. And myth number four, individual bonds are cheaper to own than bond funds. This one can be true in some cases, but it's difficult to generalize. With individual bonds, you don't pay portfolio management fees or other expenses, nor sales charges or loads, which are levied by some funds. Yet fund costs have declined over the years, especially on index funds and exchange-traded funds. The typical bond fund now charges 0.48% a year on average, $4.80 for every $1,000 invested, roughly half the level of 20 years ago, according to the Investment Company Institute. Improved economies of scale and increased competition largely explain this improvement, which also has been apparent with stock funds. Many types of bond funds are much cheaper to own, such as fixed income exchange traded funds, with average annual expenses of just 0.16%. Besides, fund managers usually can buy and sell bonds at much lower cost than individuals can, reflecting their greater purchasing power, trading acumen, access to the best issues, and so on. Many bonds, especially municipals, carry bid-asked price spreads for retail buyers.
Beware the apps that prompt you to spend. This article is from Courtney Jepperson from NerdWallet. While some apps help you save money, others have a way of encouraging you to spend more. Changing how you connect with these types of apps by deleting them, not downloading them in the first place, or limiting your interaction with them can help you rein in your spending. Subscription-based apps. Many subscription services and boxes have corresponding apps, and you may feel inclined to sign up for a subscription if you can easily manage your membership from an app. But automatic subscriptions are dangerous because consumers tend to continue using and paying for them as opposed to canceling them when they're done. If it requires action to make it stop, then we're less likely to actually take that action and make it stop. And we all fall prey to inertia. Shopping apps. Deals make people feel good. When consumer psychologist Kit Yarrow has interviewed shoppers about how they feel when getting a good bargain, they've likened it to coming in a race in first place or getting a raise at their job. There's just a winning feeling, says Yarrow, author of Decoding the New Consumer Mind, How and Why We Shop and Buy. Deal-centric apps, such as those for certain stores, bring those feel-good bargains straight to you via your smartphone. But tempting sale notifications can encourage more shopping, which means it's better to delete those retail apps altogether, or at least turn off when the app's alerts advises. That way, you aren't constantly flooded with push notifications about sales. Another strategy, download a store's app, redeemed a coupon, and then uninstalled the app just as easily as you install it. But if you're disciplined, you can keep the apps, says Casey Taylor, a partner in Bain & Company's retail practice. Take advantage of the savings within shopping apps, but also monitor how much you're spending in them. And social media apps. The products you see in your social media feed, whether from retailers or friends, could encourage you to purchase things you wouldn't otherwise buy. But deleting social media isn't an option for many. Most people really want to have a social media in their lives, so they can't get rid of those apps. Instead, she says, be aware that Instagram and Facebook will present you with buying opportunities. Be conscious that marketing is constantly targeted at you, and you're being hunted, stalked, chased down. When you go shopping online, if you stop and hover too long over a product, that product's going to show up on your social media feed, and you have to be ready to say no. For rewards apps, reward program apps, whether for a grocery store, airline, or coffee shop, typically function in much the same way. The more customers spend, the more rewards they unlock. Taylor says it can almost feel like a game. For example, in the Starbucks app, you earn stars that you can burn for rewards. If you're a very disciplined customer, you could save money by claiming a free coffee or snack using stars you've accumulated from items you are already buying. But she adds, what you see is it becomes psychologically tempting to buy things just to earn those stars. So be careful not to let climbing the tiers of a reward system lead you to spend more in the process.
Okay, it's time to turn to the editorial and viewpoint section of the Sunday Arizona Republic. And we'll first find letters to the editor in this section. The first letter is titled, You Always Hear the Bad, Now Hear the Good About Phoenix Police. With all the negative publicity about the local police, I wanted to share a very positive incident. I work at a 24-hour drugstore, and recently one of our elderly customers was having a very difficult time. She confided to our pharmacy staff that she had just about given up hope. A pharmacist, with the patient's consent, contacted the Phoenix Police Department. Soon, two officers arrived. They sat and kindly talked to the upset woman, even holding her hand. After 20 minutes, the patient got up and willingly walked out with the officers, who had promised her to find someone to help her. This may seem like a small incident, but I am sure that it happens all the time. I wanted to thank the officers for their kindness and compassion. This letter is signed by Carl Orth of Phoenix.
D-backs show their commitment to losing at trade deadline. Congratulations to the D-backs management. You have shown you will never be committed to having a winning season. Your latest trade of Zach Greinke proves just that. Well done. Signed, Patrick Neese of Phoenix.
Faster than a speeding bullet on Fifth Avenue? Inferior man. Superman believes in truth, justice, and the American way. Inferior man believes in lies, obstructing justice, and sucking up to Russian dictators. Superman embraces Americans of all colors, religions, and ethnicities. Inferior man tells those Americans he hates to go back to where they came from. Superman proudly wears the capital S on his chest. Inferior man has branded himself with a black capital I on his back. Inferior man, he's in an evolutionary step backward and a gift to late-night comics. This letter signed by Mike Newport of Phoenix.
We know how to save pedestrian lives. Lower the speed limit. After reading one more article about pedestrian deaths in Arizona, I felt compelled to point out what is most obvious about driving here. Almost all drivers consistently exceed the speed limit, often by many miles per hour. I doubt that many people will disagree with this observation. It is also clear that vehicles moving at slower speeds will do less damage and have more chance to stop than speeding ones. If one change to lower speed limit is made and enforced, there will be fewer pedestrian deaths and vehicular crashes. We should take a cue from NYC, which lowered its speed limit to 25 miles per hour after many studies supported the reduction. Their previous limit was 30 miles per hour. As the article in the Republic points out, the number of deaths in Phoenix rose again in 2018. The Phoenix City Council has voted against researching Vision Zero, the program begun in New York City to reduce pedestrian deaths. I question whether anyone is really serious about reducing pedestrian deaths. And that letter is from James McKenzie of Phoenix.
And the last letter, dumped the warmonger Bolton to ease the tension in the Gulf. Iran's re-expansion of nuclear enrichment, as well as the harassment of oil tankers in the Persian Gulf, are the predictable outcome of John Bolton's dangerous maximum pressure strategy. Trump needs to dump this warmonger and negotiate with the Iranians in good faith before a lot of Americans get killed. And this letter was written by Ali Scotton of Scottsdale.
And now for columnist E.J. Montini, and his article is titled, What I Share with the Squad. It turns out I have something in common with the squad, that informal grouping of congresswomen, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, and Rashid Tlaib of Michigan. On more than one occasion, like the representatives, I've been told I should go back where I come from. I've also been told, like them, to love it or leave it, though never by a sitting president. Donald Trump says these four women who went through the trouble of entering the political arena and are serving in Congress hate our country. I've heard some version of that, too, just recently receiving a missive from a reader who said in part, I don't understand why someone like you, who hates Arizona so much, continues to live here. Could you explain that to me? I told her I could not, because, like her, I cannot understand why someone who hates Arizona would continue to live here. I can, however, provide a bit of an explanation why someone who loves Arizona might choose to stay. For me, back in the 1980, it was the newness of the place. Having come from the industrial East, Arizona seemed to have none of the grim stodginess, the age, the sense of being set in its ways. I wrote once that Phoenix may look fully grown, but it's still a kid, an adolescence, that Phoenix had just started shaving. And it seemed true at the time, but a new resident soon discovered that what appears to be our state's youthful indiscretions, relatively speaking, are not a matter of age, but of choice. It's who we are. It's part of what draws so many dreamers, innovators, iconoclasts, crooks, and charlatans to this strange, curious, beautiful place. It's what makes living here so much fun. And while it may not seem possible to scrape away the political divisions that exist between neighbors these days, I've seen it happen here. Like on June 26, 1993, 6 days after the Phoenix Suns lost to the Chicago Bulls in the NBA Finals. There was to be a parade that day for the team. By 6 a.m., when I arrived at what was then called America West Arena, the crowd in downtown Phoenix already was larger than anything I'd seen in the city. And it kept getting larger and larger. The temperature was forecast to be 105 that day, leading police to expect about 50,000 spectators to show up. Instead, the number swelled to 300,000. I found a spot outside the arena along the parade route with a plan to walk behind the blue and white Cobra in which Charles Barkley was riding. But the car never made it to the arena's garage. The crowd swallowed the vehicle whole, but gently, not pushing or shoving, only cheers and high fives. Barkley was whisked away by officers. He later thanked and exhorted the throng from the balcony of the arena. The team of transients had brought together a community of transients. In 2003, during a time of heavy military deployments, we learned that the families of some reservists suffer financially as well as emotionally when their loved ones are called to duty. The difference between military pay and civilian pay placed some folks in a bind, so the local National Guard established a fund to assist families in need. I grew up outside of Pittsburgh and offered for the highest donation to Guard's fund a baseball that had been autographed by members of a great Pirates team from the 1960s that included Hall of Famers Roberto Clemente, Willie Stargell, and Bill Mazeroski. More than a few readers pointed out correctly that I did not deserve such a prized possession. Each seemed to throw in a few bucks, however, and some a lot more. The ball eventually brought in $66,277. And there was a time I returned to work following the death of my mother. I wrote a column about her life, talking about how I didn't want to go to first grade, and how each morning she'd walk from our house to the long, steep hillside steps leading from our neighborhood to my grade school, and sit on a step about halfway down so I could look up at recess and see her, and feel better. My office voicemail filled up, and there were emails and more emails, and cards and letters, hundreds of them. I started collecting them in binders, which I gave to my father, who read every message, note, and letter. They lifted him from his deep, dark well of sorrow. A few of them even made him smile. Imagine that. So while I'm not sure why a person would continue living in a place he hates, I know exactly why a person would stay in this place.
As kids head back to school, don't forget little things. This column written by Karina Bland of the Arizona Republic. As my Facebook feed filled with first day of school pictures, my son Sawyer was writing a thank you card to his first grade teacher for a graduation gift that had arrived in the mail. Miss Ashcraft explained she had brought the same cards for Sawyer and his friend Parker because the penguins in graduation caps made her smile. The two boys had made her smile a lot. She just never sent them. "Weird, I know," she wrote, "but maybe a couple of years out of high school, it's okay to celebrate the changes that are happening in your life. We're kind of always graduating from something." She signed it Susan, formerly known as Mrs. Ashcraft. Mrs. Ashcraft helped Sawyer discover frog and toad chapter books and studied habitats with him. She tried to tidy his handwriting. Mrs. Ashcraft didn't mind that Sawyer couldn't sit still for long. She put a second desk near hers so he could walk from one to the other when he needed to move. She gave him spongy balls to squeeze and bought him books about scorpions. As Sawyer wrote on the card, I wondered if he remembered all that. I had been so grateful for Mrs. Ashcraft, but little things like that don't usually register with kids. Sawyer handed me the card to mail. You can read it, he said. Dear Susan, which is very fun to say, I just wanted to thank you for the note you sent me. It was really quite a surprise, and it really meant a lot to me. I also just wanted to thank you for being such an understanding influence. I found myself remembering two desks and stress balls, and it becomes clear how lucky I was that I had somebody on my side willing to make such an effort for my success. So in my terrible handwriting, thank you so much. He did remember, because the little things matter.
And now we turn to the horoscopes, Dear Abby and Carolyn Hacks. For horoscopes, Aries, March 21st through April 19th. Fears are overcome with exposure. Not all exposure is alike, though. Relax first and then face the fear. To let yourself get too wound up is counteractive to your purpose.
Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. The tortoise knew he was slow, and he probably also knew he was unlikely to win the proposed race with the hare. The tactic he took was not just his only chance at winning. It was his general lifestyle. Limitations are strengths.
Gemini, May 21st through June 21st. There are many ways to stand up for yourself.
In Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd, like the tide, you roll in here and you roll in there, seeing many a distant shore. Yet none can keep you. It seems nothing can stop you from rolling right back to your home, the deep blue sea.
July 23rd through August 22nd is Leo. Confidence is more easily obtained through ignorance than it is through knowledge.
In Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd, it seems that you now owe more than you took. That's the way it goes with debt, including the debt of being alive. Interest is a fact of breathing. Not everyone has your obsession with contribution, but everyone should.
Libra, September 23rd through October 23rd. These critics who keep you grounded are crucial to your modesty and integrity. Still, they are more helpful after you've had some success. Right now, you need encouragement and dreaming, not criticism and reality.
Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. Storms are named after people. You know firsthand why this is so.
Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st. Love is a healer, but what about when there's nothing broken? Then love is the fortification, the prevention, the antioxidant.
Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Regret doesn't happen when you're fully consuming the moment you have. There's no place for regret in today's discourse.
Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th. There are those who have such a light touch emotionally that being around them is easy and breezy. When the intensity of a situation turns up, these types act as inflatables, keeping themselves and others afloat.
And Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Self-esteem is a tricky thing. It's not based on what you do. Two people could do the identical act and one could feel great about it, the other crummy. It's a matter of evaluation. It's time to tweak your rating system.
And for today's birthday, which is August 4th, wherever you go, you add something to what's going on there. You do your best to plug into groups and systems that seem to be improving things. You're a leader and an innovator. Cancer and Taurus adore you. Your lucky numbers are 5, 36, 42, 3, and 48.
All right. We'll switch now to the Dear Abby letters. And we have one letter. Dear Abby, my 13-year-old son plays on a local travel sports team. Many of his teammates could be considered lower class or lower middle class. We live in a luxurious home. We don't flaunt it, and we're not snobbish. All of the kids and the parents get along, and socioeconomic status plays no role in our interactions. My son invited a few of his teammates over for a few hours, and from the expressions on their faces, it was clear they had never seen a home like ours. They behaved like perfect gentlemen and were a pleasure to have over. My mother suggested that it would be better not to invite the boys over again because it isn't fair to them. Her concern is that it might make them feel bad because they have so much less than we do. While I understand her point of view, I also think it can be beneficial for them to see what the possibilities are in the world if you work hard and are successful. Perhaps it will inspire them to do better in school, go to college, etc. Of course, the primary purpose for their coming over was just for friends to spend time together and have fun. What do you think of these potential unintended consequences? Signed, Sports Dad in the South.
Dear Abby replies, Dear Dad, I disagree with your mother. If your son and his teammates enjoy being together in addition to the time they spend doing their sports, they should be allowed that pleasure. Your home might be the most logical place to host these gatherings simply because it is large enough to accommodate all of the boys. Because they come from a lower income level doesn't mean they can't forge meaningful and lasting friendships with your son. Many successful individuals weren't born with the proverbial silver spoon in their mouths, and many went to trade and tech schools and provide their families with very comfortable lifestyles.
All right, we'll turn now to the Tell Me About It letter. And this one is to Carolyn Hacks. Hi, Carolyn. My partner completed an undergraduate degree but struggled to find a career in that industry. Under pressure from family, they followed and struggled through a career path they hated for 2 years before deciding to go back to college to complete another undergraduate. Their mental health meant this was a difficult adjustment, and while I am supporting them through it, they are still questioning if even now this is their right career path. How can I keep helping them when they don't know what they want to do? Signed, E.
And Carolyn responds, foremost, you need to define help so that it's a manageable size for one person who is not directly involved. This is your partner's struggle, and it's bigger than just a career. By my account, there's a mental health issue, a bad fit with the first career choice, an over-involved family, your partner's own susceptibility to pressure, and intemperance to indecision-making that's now responsible for two unsatisfying educations and possibly a second bad career fit. That is a lot, so it's understandable you want to help. But the role of even the most loving involved bystander is to understand that you can't jump in and fix it. You can't be the one who seeks the mental health care, does the hard emotional work, gains the self-knowledge, chooses the career, gets the training or education, sets and holds the boundaries with families. If your partner is not ready to do these, then you need to decide how to maintain your own well-being as your partner figures out how to get to that point.
Okay, we have time to read the birthdays today. Actor Billy Bob Thornton is 64, and actress Lauren Tom from Joy Luck Club and Men in Trees is 60.
Actor Daniel Dae Kim from Hawaii Five-O and Lost is turning 51, while actor Michael DeLuise from The Gilmore Girls, NYPD Blue, is turning 50.
Singer-actor Marques Houston of Immature is 38, and singer Tom Parker of The Wanted is 31.
And actors Dylan and Cole Sprouse from the twins from The Suite Life of Zach and Cody and Grace Under Fire are both turning 27 today.
And let's see, we have a minute or so to go, so we can give you a little insight to a column that you'll hear tomorrow morning on the Monday Arizona Republic. Its title is Lose in Arizona, Lose the White House. And here's why. Choose wisely, Democrats. Strategy matters. Winning here could mean winning the Oval Office. And this column is by Fred Duval. And the title of the type of article is Your Turn. And Arizona Democrats will matter in this year's presidential election because, unlike past years when Arizona's electoral votes were predictably in the Republican column, that is no longer the case. While the GOP winning margin was 8% in 2008 and 2012, in 2016 the difference declined to less than 4%. And last year, Arizona Democrats won a U.S. Senate race, two statewide races, and gained ground from Nogales to Page. So Arizona is competitive. So the entire article will be read tomorrow. But that's all we have for today. It's reading of the Sunday Arizona Republic. I'm Bob Murphy, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, wishing you a wonderful week.
And this is Fernando Cota, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer, and I thank you for listening today.
Hi, it's Deborah. You can call me Nana Deb, like some of my grandkids sometimes call me. I hope that you'll join me on Sunday evenings for Bedtime with Nana Deb. Lots of fun and interesting stories are waiting for you.